This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three Man Front.
Just think, a week from today, we will know who's playing in the college football playoff. More hand-wringing last night. What in the world's going on with Cincinnati? Cincinnati's not in the top three. They are in the top four, so they just have to win the AAC title to punch their ticket to the college football playoff, being the first group of five team ever to do so. Will they have enough to get it done? We will see this week. And of course,
Skyline
Bama
Chili.
And Georgia.
That's all Cincinnati has to offer. Skyline Chili.
That's it?
They're not one of the top four teams in college football.
Okay. Well, we will see this weekend, see what takes place. We will dive deep into the college football playoff rankings, what took place last night. Our friend Brad Edwards will jump on with us in about 20 minutes as we will kind of dissect what took place. Georgia, Michigan, Alabama, Cincinnati. That's your top four. Oklahoma State knocking on the door. How would you like to be an Oklahoma Sooner football fan this week? You had to endure the fact that you lost Bedlam, okay? Then you have a situation where your coach leaves. Now you've got coaches that were not on the private plane going to Southern California. They're now apparently been recruiting for Southern Cal, although they're still being paid by Oklahoma. We'll get into that a little bit. And now you have your arch enemy, Oklahoma State, sitting at number five in the college football playoff.
And don't you know, Oklahoma State fans, they're sitting there and they're going, yes, yes, yes. For so long, you guys have had the upper hand. You gloat and you say, we're leaving. We're leaving. We're out. The SEC didn't want you. You guys are going off to enjoy your new future with your trophy wife, the Southeastern Conference. And then all of this goes down. Lincoln Riley leaves. As you mentioned, the program's in disarray. You beat them in Bedlam. And now you're on the cusp of earning your first trip to the college football playoff. But a lot of things have to happen.
Yes, that is correct. And it's really interesting because a team outside the top four and the penultimate rankings have reached the playoff in five of the previous 7 years of the college football playoff. The only instance in which that did not happen was back in 2016 and then again in 2020 when all four teams to reach the playoff remained in the top four. All year long, there was no change. So again, Georgia, Michigan, Bama, and Cincinnati, your top four, Oklahoma State, and Notre Dame. Now, the interesting part about Notre Dame, Gary Barta, who, of course, has grown a lot of fans over the course of this football season, a lot of fans. He said last night that the news about Brian Kelly taking the LSU job did not impact the Irish this week, but it will be considered in the discussions this weekend in part of the overall protocols. Quoting Barta now, once the championship games wrap up, the protocol does include the ability to the committee to consider a player or a coach not being available.
Well, and it should. I would think more so a player than a coach because we saw Alabama without Nick Saban last year in the Iron Bowl, and Sark was at the helm, and I don't know. You watch that game. Alabama looked pretty good. Not saying that Nick Saban has nothing to do with it. He's everything that the standard has become at Alabama with that football program. But don't you think that let's just say if it was last year, Trevor Lawrence is not going to play, or Trevor Lawrence is coming back, that would be a bigger factor than your head coach being on the sideline, especially when the rest of your staff is still intact?
Doesn't make any sense, because the committee weighs the loss of a star player during the season, as you just mentioned. It's the same exact paragraph that's in the protocol of the CFP when you're starting to break down how you're going to rank teams. So why are they deciding now to talk about it when the championship weekend is over with? Why is it not part of the rankings now? Do you see my point?
Right.
Makes no sense whatsoever. But, of course, this is the first time that they've had to deal with this particular situation.
It's going to be very interesting. And what kind of chaos, and I know we have Brad Edwards coming up, as you mentioned, at 10:24 to talk about all these crazy scenarios. But I just get the feeling we're going to get – it's not going to be cut and dry this weekend.
No.
It's not.
No.
Iowa wins the Big Ten championship game. You have – let's just say Baylor beating Oklahoma State. Cincinnati loses to Houston. Alabama beats Georgia. Or even if Georgia was to win and hold serve, man, then you're starting to think Notre Dame. Wouldn't that be just like
so
Notre
many
Dame,
people
right?
want Notre Dame to make it and perhaps win it? Because obviously Brian Kelly's not going to be the head coach. Would that not just
but
be
after
an
that, I mean,
story?
Where does this go with a Cincinnati team? Because Cincinnati sitting there at number four. If Alabama wins, if Michigan wins, Georgia's still going to be in.
Listen, if Alabama loses a close game in the SEC championship game, I think that there's going to be a serious discussion about Alabama being in the college football playoff, even with two losses.
And so that would mean that Cincinnati would be out.
That's correct.
If Michigan goes on and wins the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And I hope it happens. I really do. It's and just to hear Gary Barta, because I know we're going to hear from him. Man, he took a lesson from the last couple of weeks and things that he said. And when he was asked very specifically why this team over this team, he was like, oh, the committee went back and forth, and we just decided that this team belonged here and this team belonged there. Next question.
Alabama has a 39% chance to reach the college football playoff if they lose to Georgia.
Roll damn tide.
And that is coming from ESPN's yeah. playoff predictor. Again, Bama, a 39% chance. I mean, college football, they would revolt. Because I was seeing stuff last night. This
go
is
ahead.
Trash. I cannot believe
football.
Alabama's still in the top four. They barely beat a terrible Auburn team. Are you kidding me? They didn't play good against LSU. They didn't play good against Tennessee. Why in the world is Alabama still a top four team?
Again, have you watched Cincinnati play all season? Have you? Against bad teams. And getting by with a win, but because they didn't go to overtime, because they were able to squeak out a 6-point win over a 2-win team. Come on.
So this is my feeling after watching what I saw last night and just dissecting and kind of digesting exactly what Barta said. To me, it appears that Cincinnati does not have viability at all. That the first opportunity they have, they are going to bounce them out. Even if they win a close game, I think it's still on the table that they do not make the college football playoff. Notre Dame without Brian Kelly is going to be a problem. They are not going to put Notre Dame in there. With no Brian Kelly, that ain't happening. I think it's Georgia. Michigan wins the Big Ten. They're in. If Bama loses a close SEC championship game, I think they are strong candidates to get in. And Oklahoma State, obviously, if they win, they're in.
Let me ask you this, because I think this is a fair question. If you're Brian Kelly, why can't you go to Scott Woodward and say, Scott, I'm going to take the job. All right. Here's my word. Here's my commitment. I'm going to take the job. But can we just wait to announce it until the college football playoff has been officially announced? And then I'll do it. And then my assistants or whoever's left there in South Bend, they can go ahead and take over. Why do you think that he did that? Was that Scott Woodward saying, no, I need an answer right now. We're going to have to. Because I can't see Scott Woodward doing that.
This
could
have waited
Brian Kelly.
6 days.
Yeah. Why do you have to say it now?
No, they have because of recruiting. Because the early signing day. LSU's losing players left and right. You had a couple guys leave when Orgeron was fired. You've got Alabama, Texas A&M, and everybody coming in, swooping in, trying to get these recruits. No, every single day that went off the clock that there was not an official head coach, that was a problem for LSU in recruiting. So they had to have an answer. That's why they did what they did. Now, it all sounds great.
But we've always heard. What have we always heard? And sorry, but just to that point, what have we always heard? Well, you don't make those decisions based on one recruiting class. And there's two signing periods, plus the fact that now you can have seven extra players
signed
to your class with the transfer portal.
I will cede you that point.
Such a point of emphasis now to go ahead and make this decision, because if it does,
here's the other reason.
Cost Notre Dame a chance to go to the college football playoff because your coach just did that. That is going to be crap for those kids on that team, but it's also going to look very, very bad for not only Brian Kelly, but also LSU.
Okay, I will tell you the reason why. Is because LSU was left at the altar by Lincoln Riley. They had to move fast. They were losing news cycle after news cycle. The negativity was there. He had to make that home run higher. He had trustees breathing down his neck because they gave him $26 million to get Orgeron and his cronies off the books. So they were like going, okay, where's our guy? Where's our guy? Well, I'm sorry, Lincoln Riley, they screwed us, went to L.A., so now we got to make a move. So, yeah, that's why. Now, you said that about Brian Kelly. There apparently is no love loss between Brian Kelly and Notre Dame University. This is what it sounded like when Brian Kelly stepped in front of the LSU football players yesterday down in Baton Rouge.
My name is Brian Kelly.
and I am your new head football coach. Look, it's day one. It's the first time you've met me, so I'm not here to win the press conference, okay? That's going to take time. You know, we're going to develop a relationship. It'll take time. It's built on trust. It's built on how we go to work every day. It's built on the things that we set as a standard within this program. Look, let me tell you why I'm here. I'm here because I wanted to coach the very best players in the country that are afforded the best resources in the country and play in the best conference in the country. That's an incredible challenge to a football coach. And I get that here, and I get a chance to work with the best athletic director, president, all in alignment to get to the end of winning a national championship.
That is why Brian Kelly will never step foot in South Bend, Indiana, and do anything remotely associated with Notre Dame University. That's why his speech to his players at Notre Dame took less than 2 minutes. And within 11 minutes of him driving up to the football operations building on Notre Dame's campus yesterday, he was in the car leaving 11 minutes later. He's done. And listening to that, oh my goodness, if you're in South Bend, Indiana, that is on a loop playing time and time again, because he is taking shot after shot about the resources, about the athletic director, about not playing in a conference, because Notre Dame got teased last year. They got into a conference. They saw the excitement. They saw the level of commitment those other schools have in the ACC. Probably Brian Kelly would love to have played in a conference, but Notre Dame, being Notre Dame, the sacred cow of college football, they would not hear of such a thing. But my goodness, what Brian Kelly did as he was heading out the door.
So what does this say about the relationship that Brian Kelly had with Swarbrick in that administration? And how happy that marriage has been over the past few years?
Unbelievable. When I heard that, I was like, oh my word, this is radio gold if you're in South Bend, Indiana.
This is why Brian Kelly, we heard that he had been reaching out and seeing if there were potentially, you know, any jobs that came open. Florida State, that was one that we certainly heard about that was not reported in other places. That's why Brian Kelly didn't go back to Notre Dame and say, hey, they're offering this, want to use it as leverage. He looked at this and said, good grief, I'm not looking in the rear view. I'm going straight ahead. And it's scorched earth. It's done. That bridge has been burned. There is no repairing what he just said about Notre Dame. And it's kind of a bad look, to be honest with you. I think if you're Brian Kelly, I know you're trying to show the excitement and you're trying to endear yourself to a new fan base and the culture that is the SEC, but come on, man.
I mean, when he talks about the best players, the Notre Dame currently, he's recruiting the fourth best class in America.
Have you seen the NFL and how many players from Notre Dame?
So he takes a shot at that, and then he talks about the resources. Obviously, LSU is going to do anything necessary. If he comes down there and says, hey, I would like a new whatever center, or I need this, or I need that, LSU is going to do it. Notre Dame's not going to do it. If there was a player that might have been on a fence – from an academic standpoint, Notre Dame's not going to let them in. LSU is going to let them in.
Well, it just depends. It's one of those, you know, check with me type things at Notre Dame. Circumstantial, right? So some players get in and then another player
might not get in.
It just depends on whoever's in charge of that, whether it's admissions, some kind of council up there, whatever, what kind of mood they're in, it seems like.
So you're saying we won't have a home and home between Notre Dame and LSU anytime soon?
No, but I'd love to see them in a bowl game.
Let's get one.
Wow. And Brian Kelly went on the Dan Patrick Show this morning, and he was asked if he will try to lure the players he was recruiting at Notre Dame to LSU. Brian Kelly said no. Patrick went on to say that Lincoln Riley is going after decommitting OU players at USC. Quoting now, Lincoln Riley can do what he wants. Brian Kelly is going to do what he wants. That is the quote from Brian Kelly. So in other words, he took a shot there at Lincoln Riley.
Also, he said he's not going to try. I'm not going to try to do it. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try to do it.
Yeah.
Do or do not. There is no try. Yoda once said that.
So Brian Kelly, that's a great segue to what's going on at Oklahoma. The feeling in Oklahoma City this morning is that within the next 24 to 36 hours, you could have a new head coach at Oklahoma. So the question is, who is going to be that head coach? The general feeling is that Brent Venables is leading the race right now to be the next head man. Dan Lanning, who is the defensive coordinator at Georgia, who's 35 years old. He's from Kansas City, Missouri. He's in the running, or was in the running last year at Kansas Landrum. And so no question that he wants to be a head coach. And because of his age, I think that is enticing to Oklahoma because Lincoln Riley was so young. Now, of course, Lanning is a defensive guy, but I think everybody would admit that Oklahoma over the last couple of years has had a situation where they might not feel like they're as tough as they need to be on the defensive side of the ball. Yeah. So if you've got either Brent Venables or Dan Lanning as your head coach, that could potentially change things.
Well, I mean, I guess you would go with Brent Venables. Dan Lanning, that's not going to move the needle, especially if you're trying to pick up traction and get back on track with recruiting. Look, I know that Bob Stoops, what he was defensively, but Brent Venables, I don't know how much that moves the needle either. He's been at Clemson, but that star has faded.
But are you trying to move the needle to the people in Oklahoma, or are you trying to move the needle to everybody else around the Big 12 / SEC?
I think you're trying to move the needle to everyone and saying we're still Oklahoma. We're still relevant. We didn't win the Big 12. We're not in the Big 12 championship game. We're not going to be in a college football playoff, but we're still Oklahoma, and you can go out and get a quality head coach. I look at a guy like Brent Venables, no disrespect, but how are you entrusting him? Just because of the familiarity with the program and serving there under Bob Stoops, you're going to turn it over to him? I go after an offensive-minded guy. Look, I don't know how it's going to go with Josh Heupel at Tennessee, but I know that they're 7-5 this year, and he did more than I ever dreamed that he would do with that roster that he had in place. Look at Lane Kiffin winning 10 games at Ole Miss. I think if you reached out, if you were Oklahoma and you reached out to a Lane Kiffin and said, hey, you know what? Bring the visor. Bring that style of offense. Come on. Make him tell you no and throw a bunch of money at him.
Or you go Jeff Lebby.
Or go Jeff Lebby. I just think, again, no disrespect, but I don't have to please Brent Venables and I don't have to please Dan Lanning. You're Oklahoma. You can go and get a big name coach. Now it's not going to be a Brian Kelly, but you can still go and get a big name. I don't know. I think that you're not doing yourself justice if it is indeed Brent Venables.
Well, the most interesting part about all of this, that's what's happening now with Oklahoma. If you follow recruiting and you're seeing some stories come out of Oklahoma and Southern California, that is really making the people in Norman, Oklahoma even more incensed. Five-star cornerback Damani Jackson, he recently narrowed down his list of two schools to USC and Alabama. Now, along the way, he appears to have suggested a previously unreported name will be leaving Oklahoma and joining Lincoln Riley's staff at USC. That is cornerbacks coach Roy Manning. So remember that name, Roy Manning. Manning was hired in January of 2019 as Oklahoma's cornerbacks coach. He was on the recruiting trail with interim head coach Bob Stoops on Tuesday afternoon representing Oklahoma. Now, I bring this up because three-star wide receiver Xavien Bryce, he goes on social media and he does an interview with 247 where he thanks Manning and other Sooner staffers for a home visit on Twitter hours after Jackson, Damani Jackson, who I just mentioned, the five-star, suggested on a conflicting story that his interest in USC and Alabama inched closer because of the decision of Riley going to USC, but he apparently mentioned that he had been discussing the potential of the Trojans with Manning for weeks.
Boy.
So the guy that was with Bob Stoops recruiting.
I mean, Bob Stoops is sitting there. You think he was ticked off?
On Tuesday, according to this interview on 247, that Manning has been discussing the possibility of Southern California.
I bought you lunch.
With this particular recruit for more than a couple weeks.
Man, this is a terrible, terrible look, if true.
Now, I would think that Oklahoma may have, you want to talk about a compliance officer?
Yeah.
And you want to talk about, I mean, somebody, I mean, this, if this is true and this can be corroborated and this is true, then you might have a situation where this kid would not be eligible to go to USC. Based on if this is true, in regards to Manning
tampering,
recruiting him to USC while he's employed and being paid by Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I wonder what kind of repercussions would come Manning's way if you're acting on behalf of two universities simultaneously.
I mean, he could be censured,
while you're still under
show cause. I mean,
show cause. You never know.
No telling what kind of stuff. So,
but then maybe at this point the NCAA goes, "Nah, you boys handle it. You don't want us involved. You guys go ahead."
So all's fair in love and recruiting.
Don't you know,
right?
He's about to blow his top though after going out on the road recruiting with this coach, and he's giving
and now
you,
the story
he's
is
giving
out
all
that,
the things yeah. about yeah, you know, Oklahoma, you know, I love it here and da 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 da. It's been so great for me and my family. And then just as soon as he lets him out of the car, he gets on his cell phone to call a recruit and
it's
fight on.
A lot of things I was like, oh crap, I think I'm gonna run back inside. I think I have my keys.
Yeah.
You go ahead. I'll be all right, seriously. let me talk about USC.
He looks. He's like, what? Why are you using another phone?
Hey, wait, Coach Stoops, the distillery called. They had a question about a vodka order. Do you mind going outside and taking that while I talk to this recruit?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Lincoln sends his best from Southern California.
That's the seventh time you've had to go to the bathroom today. What is wrong with you? Oh, Coach, it's just I got stomach issues.
So anyway.
Why do you have four phones?
Just when you thought it was going to get a little bit better for Oklahoma, it got a little worse within the last 24 hours. So we'll see what happens in regards to their head coaching position.
Yep, and it's the most wonderful time of the year, not only because of college football, but when the weather's cold and holiday parties. Well, that means they're coming soon. Turn your annual holiday party up a notch, hosted at Twin Peaks. Unforgettable experience that might be tough to remember. I got a feeling Saturday's action will not be tough to remember. Brad Edwards, formerly of ESPN, Dynasty by the Numbers author, joins us next. We play out all the crazy scenarios, including how two-loss Alabama gets into the college football playoff. That's next.
This is Three-Man Front.
It is Three-Man Front. Jockstani 4-5. We have college basketball coming up tonight. UAB in action out of CUSA. You're going to get that game on Jocks 2 100.5 with the pregame beginning at 6 o'clock. Voice of the Blazers, David Crane. Pat Smith will be a part of that broadcast.
Yes, I will be. UAB, man, just, you know, you're doing a basketball game at 1 o'clock in the morning. You want to win. You know what I'm saying? And that's what happened on Friday night going into Saturday morning in Las Vegas. But Blazers lost by a point, a tough one, had an opportunity to. But, again, Blazers 5-2 on the season.
Yep. You got East Tennessee State, the Buccaneers, coming into Bartow Arena. Also coming up tonight, Central Florida taking on Auburn, the 21st-ranked team in the country. They return home at 6:30 right here on Jocks 94.5. Also, the Super 7 getting kicked off tonight inside a protective stadium. You have Thompson and Central Phoenix City. WOTM is the official broadcaster of that. You'll have to check your local listings, though. If you have satellite, you will not be able to find it there. But if you have UVerse, if you have Spectrum, some of the other cable providers throughout the state of Alabama, all you have to do is go to ahsaa.com and check out the website there and find out how you can view that. This should be a great, great matchup.
I need to correct you because it starts at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
3 o'clock this afternoon. I'm sorry.
3 o'clock.
All these games are running together.
Girls Flag Football Championship is at 3 o'clock.
You on the call for that?
I am.
Yeah. I know you've been calling a lot of their postseason.
That is correct.
I want to apologize, friend, because That would make sense, yes. And I know that you've been studying hard for it.
Smith Station versus Hewitt Trussville. That is correct. The first ever, the inaugural state championship game, Hewitt Trussville.
What would that mean? Are we talking about Highway 11 being backed up, parade? Will it be similar to what we saw with the Braves? If
no, because there have been state championships won.
But this is the first ever.
Well, I understand
that. The first ever flag football state championship. Mayor Smith.
Not the mayor. That's Buddy Choate. Does a fantastic job. I'm perfectly happy being a citizen of Trustful.
Right,
but I just want to correct you. 3 o'clock.
Okay. 3 o'clock for flag football and then 7 o'clock for the other game that they're going to play.
Yes, that's a big one. And we'll talk
tackle in that one.
Yes, we'll talk to Kyle Parmalee coming up in the next segment in regards to the Super 7. Should be an exciting time this week at Protective.
Yeah. Exciting time at Archetype right there in Homewood. Dr. John Palmer, his staff, chiropractic Claire. I use them. Cole Kublik uses them. Matt McLaren uses them. And some of our Jocks listeners already using them. You can as well to try to get out of pain. Also, the total fitness, nutrition, performance that they offer as well. Archetype.health or 205-803-1234, formerly of ESPN. It is Brad Edwards. Dynasty by the Numbers, a great gift idea with the holidays approaching. And he joins us on the Bud Light Hotline. Brad, welcome in. Hope you're doing well. College football playoff rankings last night. Everything's going to be settled, we believe, this upcoming weekend. But what jumped out to you as far as results and just something that maybe, I don't know, raised your eyebrow a little bit as to what the committee could be thinking?
Yeah, I don't guess it was anything that was super surprising about the rankings last night. It certainly wasn't surprised that Alabama kind of stayed at third, that Ohio State was essentially replaced by Michigan. Not really surprised by how far Ohio State fell. There really wasn't anything that jumped out as odd, but what really grabbed me as I started looking at it and asking some of the same questions I've been asking in previous weeks is that every time I've become convinced that what Alabama just did, winning a game in unimpressive fashion, would likely be the final straw as far as them having any chance whatsoever to survive a loss in the SEC championship game and still somehow make it into the playoff without winning the conference, I still continue to see scenarios where I think it could happen. And I think that's what jumped out at me when I started looking at it last night. You know, you look at essentially what they did with Notre Dame, you know, moving Oklahoma State ahead of them. And the fact that it was mentioned that, you know, Brian Kelly is no longer there and that could be a factor. You know, you start asking the question, if Alabama had a close loss to Ohio State, what are the chances that they would fall behind either Notre Dame or Ohio State, neither of whom is playing? And I was looking through some numbers and looking at precedent for this, and basically top six teams that lose a conference championship game, they, first of all, there have only been two top six teams that have ever lost a conference championship game to a higher ranked team. And those were both SEC championship games. It was Georgia losing to Alabama in 2018 and Georgia losing to LSU in 2019. And in both cases, Georgia fell from 4 to 5. In both cases, they were jumped by an Oklahoma team that had just won the Big 12 championship the day before. The only times that a conference champion ranked in the top six has ever fallen behind a team that didn't play the previous day or on that final weekend, there have been four instances where it happened. Two of them, including Auburn 2017, were a team that took its third loss of the season. And so none of the, whether you're looking at Alabama, Michigan, whatever, like none of those teams fall into that category this year. The other two, there was a Wisconsin team that lost, and they got jumped by Alabama. This was 2017, but Wisconsin didn't have a single top 20 win on its resume, and it just lost its conference championship game. The other one was a Utah team that was ranked number 5. They lost to number 13, Oregon, and they lost by 22. So when you start looking at these scenarios, and there's basically no precedent for a number 3 team losing a close game to number 1 and then falling behind teams that didn't play. And so basically what it kind of comes down to is, if that were to happen, is there one upset somewhere else? Either Michigan, Cincinnati, or maybe Oklahoma State. I still think Baylor has a decent chance to finish ahead of Alabama by beating Oklahoma State. But certainly I think either Iowa or Houston winning on Saturday could create a scenario where Alabama has an outside shot with a close loss. I'm not going to say it's definite, but I think there's still a chance, and that's kind of what jumped out at me last night.
Okay, so if Cincinnati were to lose to Houston, do you believe they're out completely?
Yes. Yeah, I don't see any way. Yeah, I mean, they've done all this, and 4 has been their ceiling. There's no way you're going to lose to the number 20-something team on the last day, not be a conference champion, and stay in the top 4. That's not going to happen.
Well, and the reason I asked is because if Michigan loses the Big Ten championship and Alabama loses to Georgia and Cincinnati loses, I didn't know if that they had done enough to where they would still remain in the top four.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly comes down to what does the loss look like? You know, do you lose a game in a flukish way in which you outgained the opponent by 200 yards? Or do you lose by 10? You know, I mean, there are different ways that, that some of these things could happen. And, you know, look, I guess what's weird is that, like let's just say, for example, Michigan loses to Iowa. It still seems unlikely to me that Michigan would fall behind Ohio State. Now, you know, might they drop behind Notre Dame? It's possible, but Notre Dame, I mean, as of today, doesn't have a single top 25 win. I mean, if you're going to put Notre Dame in without a top 25 win, then what does that say about what you're doing with, you know, previous years, like an undefeated UCF or whomever it may be? You know, so I don't know. There's some interesting scenarios there when you start to look at it. Ohio State, by the way, has only one top 25 win right now, which is Michigan State. So just when you look at the teams that are sitting there kind of on the fringe, it's hard to imagine them jumping up. So the question is, you know, I think Baylor would have a chance, a very outside chance of jumping into the top four if they win and they get a couple of breaks. Could Oregon? I don't know. I mean, they've got to come up with four teams. And That becomes the question. You know, if Oregon wins, might the head-to-head with Ohio State come back into play again, both with two losses? Oregon being a conference champ, Ohio State's not. I mean, that's possible, too. So it's setting up where it could be interesting, but it's only going to be interesting if there's an upset other than Alabama beating Georgia. It would have to be an upset in one of the other conference championship games.
So if that does happen, though, Alabama beats Georgia – and let's just say it's decisive. We know that Georgia's still going to be in. And now we're talking seeding. I'm not even talking about the teams that are in there. Alabama would obviously be in. How does the committee seed those teams? Michigan, I'm guessing, would be there at one if they beat Iowa and do as expected and win the Big Ten?
I don't think so. I think Alabama would go over Michigan. I think the way that Georgia has dominated this year, and not to mention that would be the second top 10 win for Alabama. I mean, Alabama not only beat Ole Miss, but they beat them convincingly. And so they would have a win over not just two top 10 teams, but one of them being a team that had looked unbeatable all season long. I think Alabama would go to number one if they win. And I think Georgia and Michigan would be the next two teams. And in whatever order, I think they would play each other in a semi. And then it's just a question of who would be number four. I do believe if Oklahoma State wins the Big 12, I think they're jumping Cincinnati. The question is, will they both get in anyway? But I have difficulty seeing unless Cincinnati just absolutely runs Houston out of the stadium. I think advantage is in Oklahoma State's favor as far as coming out ahead of Cincinnati if both teams win.
In regards to Notre Dame, and you just briefly mentioned it, but Gary Barta said last night that they would take a look at the fact that Brian Kelly is no longer there at Notre Dame in their discussions about Notre Dame possibly being one of the four best teams. Just your thoughts on that. I know this is the first time that you've had to deal with that in regards to a coach leaving and their team is still considered for the college football playoff, but how do you think that will be handled?
How it will be handled is tough to say. I think it really comes down to the input from the former coaches that are on that committee. You know, as far as how does this really affect, you know, long-term prep for a game? Because we're not talking about a one-week turnaround where you just have, you know, basically 3 days to put in a game plan. I mean, you know, you've got essentially 4 weeks to get ready for the next game. And you would think that would be a situation where the head coach's input would be more significant, but I could be wrong. I mean, I've never been on a team preparing to play a bowl game. I do know just, you know, from watching many other bowl games, not playoff games, but other bowl games, that there have been a lot of cases where teams with an interim head coach and even an interim head coach with a thin staff because the guy left and took some assistants with him. Those teams have won bowl games before. So, a lot of times it just it comes down to, I mean, one, the talent on the team, two, how motivated they are. And obviously the coaching is a factor, especially with long-term prep. But do we know enough to say that that is worth a field goal, a touchdown? I mean, I have no idea. I mean, it seems pretty much unprecedented for a team that is about to play a game, with national title significance to not have its head coach. What do we have to look at to say how much of a difference that makes? I can't think of one. And so, yeah, whether they give that a whole lot of consideration or not, I don't know. I think the bigger factor is Wisconsin losing last week, and now Notre Dame doesn't have a top 25 win. I will say this. On Sunday, when whatever the storyline may be and whatever we're trying to figure out as far as who's in contention for the fourth and final playoff spot, when the rankings start to – oh, actually, you know, you don't see them because Sunday is not like all the other days. We'll get the top four first because I was going to say if you got the normal countdown from 25, you'll learn a lot by who's sitting in that, you know, 21 through 25 space because what the committee typically does is in order to justify whatever their choice is, they'll cram opponents of those teams, the team that they put in the four spot, they'll cram at least one of their opponents into the back end of the top 25 in order to have a better explanation for why they did it because they're all about checking boxes. They can't just say, oh, we think they're better, which is all I would really have to say. So I don't know. I don't know how much of a deal that'll make for Notre Dame, but like I said, I think the fact that they're really lacking a quality win is much more significant.
Okay, so Brad, with all of this, and it gets very confusing when we go through these hypothetical scenarios, and you're so good at keeping a clear head and explaining them all to us, but with Alabama, if Alabama, they play Georgia close because nobody else has, and it's a 3-point Georgia win, will that be enough where the committee's not even thinking about Alabama being removed from the top four? Then it's just a matter of what did Oklahoma State do and then jumping Cincinnati. Is that possibly what we're looking at?
Yeah. Now, look, I think if Oklahoma State wins the Big 12, I have no doubt they're going to be ahead of an Alabama team that loses to Georgia even in four overtimes. Now, what happens if you know, I think it would require either Michigan or Cincinnati to lose for Alabama to have a fighting chance with a close loss to Georgia. I think if you look at Baylor, you know, the thing I forgot about, I was looking back at Baylor's resume last night or their schedule, their body of work, and I forgot that they had beaten BYU. And that BYU win, you know, when you look at the fact that Baylor already has a win over Oklahoma, and then if they added one over Oklahoma State and they have BYU, I mean, that's three top 15 wins right there. I think that plus being a conference champion would be enough to get them over Alabama. So I don't think the Big 12 championship game is that significant to the Tide. I think any chance they would have of surviving a really, really close loss to Georgia would depend on either Michigan or Cincinnati being upset.
He's the best, Brad Edwards, formerly of ESPN, author of Dynasty by the Numbers, BamaDynastyBook.com. That's where you go right now. You can purchase the book just in time for the holidays. Brad, we always appreciate it. How cold is it in Connecticut?
It's been in the 20s most mornings nice. Lately, but at least the sun's out. We got a little bit of snow over the weekend, but it didn't stick. So
hey, it's going to be 73 here on Saturday.
Yeah,
73.
You guys have fun playing golf while I look at an empty golf course.
Well, it's going to be an early tee time because we got a lot of college football we're going to be watching on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a decent amount to watch on Saturday.
Yeah, not bad. Hey, Brad, we always appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
You got it. And enjoy the flag football, too.
Oh, you bet it. We'll.
We all will. That is Brad Edwards. Dynasty by the Numbers. BamaDynastyBook.com. All of our guests join us on the Bud Light Hotline. Carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there. We'll preview all the high school action, including flag football, with Kyle Parmley. He's next.
This is Three Man Front.
Three Man Front here on this Wednesday. We jump right into it. We have the flag football championship of the AHSAA, the inaugural, today, 3 o'clock at Protective Stadium. Tonight, Class 7A You have the Thompson Warriors going after another championship, taking on Central Phoenix City there at Protective Stadium. And then you have three games coming up tomorrow, three games on Friday. Kyle Parmalee is going to be there for it all, and he is a part of Starnes Media, and he joins us on the Bud Light Hotline. Kyle, first of all, let's get the big one out of the way. First, you have Hewitt Trustful taking on Smith Station in flag football. I know Pat is dialed in. He's ready. He's been studying for about 7-8 weeks now leading up to this. What do you see in this matchup? Who has the advantage?
Hey, guys. Good to be on with you again. But, yeah, absolutely. What a great way to kick off the Super 7 with a little girls flag football action. The fun thing about Hewitt Trustful's team is they've got softball coach Taylor Burt and girls basketball coach Tanya Hunter kind of spearheading the team there. And if you know anything about either one of their programs, just world-class competitors. And you knew as soon as they agreed to be the coaches, this team was going to be pretty good. And they have they've steamrolled just about everybody. They beat Oxford 25-0 in the semis. So yeah, really looking forward to seeing how it all shakes out and a chance for Hewitt to get another blue map today.
It would be an amazing thing for those girls to be able to do that going up against Smith Station at 3:00. All right, let's talk about the game later in the evening. Boys 7A championship will be decided, and Central Phoenix City, that's the team most everybody told me during the year that was the team that was going to come out of the South and probably the most likely to face Thompson. What do you like in this game in regards to Central Phoenix possibly pulling the upset?
Yeah, you know, I've been trying to think, and the path to victory for a team like Central is they're going to have to play their A game and hope Thompson makes a mistake. I just don't see any way that if Thompson plays their best tonight, there's nobody in the state that can beat them. But they could get a good test from Central. This Central team, unbeaten, you know, they knocked off their rival Auburn twice this year, once in the regular season, had to come back late in the second half last week to get the job done there. So this is a good team. You know they're going to be well coached. Patrick Nix has done a phenomenal job everywhere he's been. And this is kind of the rubber match between these two programs. They've met twice in the state championship over the last few years, and both of them have been blowouts. The first one was a blowout in favor of Central. Last time these teams played 2 years ago, Thompson won handily. So I just don't see this being a scenario like last year. You know, that game with Thompson and Auburn was really close because Thompson didn't have their quarterback. So Connor Harrell looked pretty good when I saw him against Hoover in the semifinals, and if he's anywhere close to full health, then it's going to be hard for Central to find a way to victory there.
All right, Kyle, we'll go in order here quickly. Coming up in 6A, you got a very impressive Clay Chalkville team. The rematch with Hueytown, a team that is very good and has been very good with that program over the last several years. How do you see the rematch shaking out?
Yep, Clay Chalkville was Hueytown's only loss this year, and that was early on, and that game had like 97 combined points. I mean, these two offenses are just incredible. And Hueytown's defense has gotten better as the year's gone on, but Clay Chalkville's offense is so good and so dangerous. But then again, so is Hueytown. So if one team, you know, gets a couple stops and enforces a couple turnovers, this could change the game. But, yeah, Clay Chalkville is just – man, they're on a different level this year, and I would expect the Cougars to prevail there. But, yeah, a lot of points to be expected in that one.
Another model of consistency is we jump to 5A Pleasant Grove here in the Birmingham area, taking on Pike Road. Pleasant Grove trying to get that state title that has eluded them. Pike Road, one of those young, up-and-coming programs. I'd say they're there right now. How do you see this one shaking out?
Yeah, that Pike Road program has really risen up, and they are a phenomenal football team. And man, this Pleasant Grove program has been on the wrong end of some heartbreaking losses in the state championship game the last couple of years. So it would mean a lot to that community and that program if Daryl LeBeau could get them that state title, and they are going to have to earn it. That is for sure.
All right. How about Vigor and Aniana taking on each other in the 4A coming up on Friday at 11?
Yeah, you got a program in Vigor that's been here before and is used to being a really strong team. And this Aniana team has knocked off some of the big dogs on the way to get there. So I really do think, you know, just like all seven of these games, you've got two really, really good teams that it's hard to see. You know, you could easily see all of these being fantastic matchups, and the Santayana team really kind of came out of nowhere and is in the state championship with a chance to make it happen.
In Class 3A, Montgomery Academy in Piedmont. Piedmont surprising a lot of people, beating a very good Winfield team decisively in the semifinals, 43-14. Meanwhile, Montgomery Academy, they've looked strong all year as well.
Yeah, they have. This Piedmont team, you know, you're not used to seeing them lose to anybody, and they dropped a couple this year. But as the playoffs came around, they've rounded into form, and they are playing a Montgomery Academy team that has put together a really strong playoff run as well. Three regular season losses, but they really turned it around and have got some momentum going. But I favor Piedmont in that one.
All right, we got about 40 seconds left. You got Clark County and Cleveland in the 2A, and also Sweetwater and Wadley in the 1A.
Yeah, in 2A, Clark County and Cleveland, this is a situation where one of these teams is going to win their first state championship. So it'd be really cool for one of those communities to get that done. And then Sweetwater, they win the championship quite often, and they're playing a Wadley team that might just be happy to be there. So look for Sweetwater to get it done there as well.
Good stuff. All right, Kyle, enjoy all the action. We appreciate all you've done for us all season long here on Three Man Front. Go and watch some ball.
Appreciate you guys.
Kyle Parmley, Starnes Media, joining us here on Three Man Front on the Bud Light Hotline. Carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there.
Well, the transfer portal, it never closes. We'll update you the very latest of Alabama and Auburn players in the portal. Also, we'll kind of give it a review of the SEC season with Connor O'Gara next hour. This is Three Man Front on Jocks 94.5.
This is Three Man Front on Jocks 94.5.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.